You're just waiting for the hammer to fall. Hey guys, what is happening? Today, yes, it's a Queen Deep Dive. Let's get straight to it. Queen Deep Dive Day. And we're getting closer and closer to the end of this 11th album, Queen's 11th album released in 1984, The Works. Second to last song today. And I was surprised not only how much I found about this song, I wish I had more comments from the boys, but just in general, how much I came across and the way the song sounds. Okay, there isn't a whole lot about this that's particularly complex. We have a lot of the same chords recycling, but for some reason, the elements of this song that make it what it is, that create this wonderful rock number, are really intriguing and dynamic and interesting. And we're going to get into great detail with that. I'm not sure if I simply became enamored with this song as I was going through it or what happened. But I can tell you, I enjoyed going through this. And that is really surprising to me because I wasn't super, super jiving with this song previously. That's not to say I didn't enjoy it. No, that's not what I mean. It just wasn't one of those songs from Queen that I went, oh, that's my jam. Nevertheless, this jumped out at me as I was going through it, and I think I have a new love for it. Partially because, yes, I took in some of the live performances, which are very impressive. But what's interesting is this song has this incredible energy that's really enlightening and insightful and somewhat uplifting in a strange way. And I say strange because the lyrics are some of the darkest, most depressing words we get from our composer, Brian May. Dr. Brian May, my favorite writer in Queen. Moody May, as I so lovingly call him, because I love the emotion, I love the expression in his work. And this is track number 8 on The Works. Hammer to fall. Hammer to fall. Yeah, we say that phrase so many times in this track. Bringing it down. Brian is not letting up on this. And Freddie's delivery of this in that lead vocal is absolutely stellar. In this rock song at 127 dives. This is dive number 127. Can you believe it? We're getting down to it. Slowly but surely. And this was a single, Hammer to Fall, released in September of 1984, September 10th in the UK, and October 12th of 84 in the US. It topped out at number 13 in the UK, but it didn't chart in the US. Of course, we talked about why subsequent singles that were released after I Want to Break Free, unfortunately, didn't do very well in the US, but this did chart in Australia at 55 and South Africa at number 3. Number 3, my favorite number. We're at 128 BPM in the time signature of 4/4 in the key of A major with just a nod, a whisper, an echo of C major. We'll talk about this song's key a little bit later. There's a fascinating fact about this song. But Hammer to Fall, yes, it is dark. It's kind of depressing. If you were to just read the lyrics, you would sit back and think to yourself, wow, this is poetic destruction. And it is about death. Death is just a part of life. That is essentially what Brian is giving us here. When this song was released as a single, there was a slightly different feel for it and what the lyrics were about. And there could be, I suppose, a nod to that a little bit, but I think it's less about that than people perceived at the time, and we'll talk about that. But this is such a perfectly rock number. All of the boys are in fine form, and Brian's impressive acceptance of pending death. Simple structure, that handful of chords, and a verse-chorus arrangement that feels like one long choral rally cry. And despite those occasional synth blips and pitch bends, this is very much a classic Queen song. Heavy on guitars, cymbal-rich, bombastic drums, my favorite, Freddie aggressive on lead, and John providing some attention-grabbing melodic bass lines. I'm reminded of many earlier sounds, actually, from Liar, Misfire, Fat Bottom Girls, even Dragon Attack. Other people will say this sounds more like Tear It Up, which, of course, came on this album previously, and songs that are much more recent. Dancer. But I don't know. I hear a lot of early, early songs here, just in little snippets, little moments that echo motifs from those numbers. But that's what I love about Queen. We get those iron threads that carry all the way through from the beginning to the end of their catalog. Some of our favorite notable elements are present. We've got rich vocal harmonies from all three of our singers, grittier, squealing, soaring guitar, lots of guitars. Amazing how our composer can provide some of the smoothest, most soothing lines, and then turn right around with guitar that just cuts like a knife. Roger's percussive touches between lyrics and vocals are, as always, perfectly interjected. And Freddie takes this for a ride in full, high chest voice, rounding out this rowdy rock number that sounds surprisingly uplifting. Yes, despite our author's acceptance of the inevitable. Brian always has a way of exploring, seeking truth, processing in his own way. And through that reflection is a statement that's both realistic and empowering. Such a dark tone here, this focus on death. But we get this a lot, don't we, from Brian? All dead, all dead. He sings about reflection of the afterlife and long away. This man is seeking, seeking, seeking. And I know back then, perhaps he was open-minded, but he didn't really believe in anything, I don't think. And now, I wonder if that's changed. I wonder if he has a different perspective now. That would be a fairly deep topic over tea. I imagine I would want to discuss with him. If it came up organically, I would never force that issue. But I've always wondered, as Brian has lived his life, and especially after the tragedy of losing Freddie, and no doubt losing other people in his life close to him, one does reflect on that, and one does perhaps wonder. And Brian has always wondered about the afterlife and about death and what that means for all of us. But it's interesting that that is constantly coming up from our composer everywhere. Even White Queen, as it began, has echoes of that sentiment of walking away from something and being at a loss forever. It feels like this doom and gloom. And I love that. White Queen, as it began, is one of my favorite Brian numbers, period. It's right up there with Father to Son. And of course, it follows Father to Son. Such a wonderful transition, that one. But this, Hammer to Fall, yes, very dark, very destructive, very aggressive in its tone. And it's a nice resurgence of that, because on the works, we've had this very unique mix of sounds. And yet a lot of people think the album is quite disjointed because we're going from very synth, new wave, sort of atmospheric infused pop to something that is much more rock. And then we go into a very dramatic ballad of rock. And then we have some, you know, rockabilly. And there's a very unique, wide, dynamic mix on this album that isn't unlike Queen previously, but I think for some, this was a little bit too scattered and all over the place. But it's nice to come back to this rock. This is far and away a classic element of Brian, of May rock and roll. It's fantastic. And this song was a live favorite, played 74 times, mostly 84 through 86, once in 92, and a handful of times in 02. And during 80s performances, touring keyboardist Spike Edney would appear on stage playing rhythm guitar, a rare treat for him. And boy, you can see how much he enjoys it. Just watch any video and watch that man dig in alongside Brian and John. And of course, Freddie bouncing around the stage. It's exciting to see someone else join the mix, and you can see that it works really well. It doesn't feel like he's the odd man out. It feels like it's this wonderful crescendo of guitars, and it works incredibly well. But perhaps the most iconically, perhaps this was most iconically performed at Live Aid. It was the third song on their set list that day, sandwiched perfectly between AO and Crazy Little Thing. And it's amazing the energy Freddie retains and his grip on the audience throughout all of that. But I want to talk about Budapest in 86. I want to talk about Budapest. What a riot. What fun that performance was. All of the boys are spot on. Keyboardist Spike has an absolute blast rocking out with John and Brian at the center front of the stage. Freddie's voice is in fine form. He's clear, strong, hits those high tonics in full voice. Impressively so. Roger's drumming is fire, as is his high, raspy harmony. And hey, is John singing? Really? Maybe? Oh, I hope he did. Even if the mic was off, his dance moves, his unrelenting pace on that bass, and Brian clearly having a blast. Everybody has such a great time in this number, especially Freddie. It's nearly an effortless performance from him and everyone. Stunning. And Brian's long coat. Really, they all look fab. Euless. Plenty consider this one of their finest live songs, if not the finest. Plenty of people love Hammer to Fall. In fact, when I see people mention it, it is most often in a live context. Most certainly a live context. Some fun facts about Hammer to Fall, the live picture sleeve taken from the video performance of this single, is now a rare collector's item, a gorgeous shot of the impressive lighting display illuminating the boys in their bright white costumes surrounded by Golden Queen lettering. And there is a single version of the song that omits a break as well as the solo, and there's an extended version which includes another intro as well as an additional solo. The well-known lyric, "We're just waiting for the hammer to fall," was initially perceived as a reference to the Cold War turning hot. But we'll learn more about this truth in a moment. This song did in fact appear in the film Highlander, as well as Stranger Things' second season. The coolest fact, I bet you didn't know, this song is tuned down. This jumped out at me primarily listening to Freddie's lead vocal. Not that he's flat. He's in tune with the song, of course. But to me, it still sounded off. And I went back in and I was researching. And I was playing notes and I went, oh, yep, this song is tuned down. It's not quite at a perfect A major. It's just a little bit under it. It's an interesting fact. I have to assume that was intentional. I'm not sure why. You would think that it would make it difficult to replicate that live. So I don't know. Interesting choice. But I still, to this day, as much as I've grown to really love this song, when I hear it, there are moments where Freddie is singing that high tonic, full chest voice. And again, he's not off pitch. No, he's right on pitch with the instruments. It's just everything to me feels flat. Like, it's flat. I can't help it. That's just the way I'm wired. But yes, go and plug in an instrument, go to your piano. punch something out in an app on your phone and you'll see what I'm talking about. This is just under pitch. It's interesting. And for people like me who hear things on the pitch, it's a little bit maddening, apparently. And actually makes it difficult for me to sing it in tune because I think my voice wants to go to the actual note. It's weird. But there you have it. Hammer to Fall is a little bit tuned down. And Brian played a ballad arrangement of this on his Another World tour in 1998. You know what? I actually meant to go find that. I meant to go find that and listen to it so I could critique it on this episode, and I didn't do that. So you know what? I'm going to do something I never do. I'm going to pause this, and I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. That was interesting. It started out like it's late, almost identical. I thought, am I listening to the right song? Is this labeled right? Is this titled correctly? But nope, it shifted into that really ballad heavy arrangement of Hammer to Fall. And it grew into this very gospel-inspired piece with the backup lady singing beautifully. And then it finally, about halfway through or so, as we get past the bridge and back into the outro, it really starts rocking and we hear some of those Brian riffs and we hear that enthusiasm from him, and it closes out in this really massive crescendo. Nicely done. Very surprised. I knew it was going to be slow, but I didn't realize exactly how it was going to pan out. So that was quite fun. You should go listen to it. I'll probably link to it. It's very fascinating to hear his take on that song all those years later. And I'd love to hear it again like that. I do have some band critique, not as much as I wanted. I'm surprised I didn't find more, but I did find, so Freddie called this, quote, one of those heavy headbanger things, unquote, in Wembley Arena in 84. And Brian, I have the most commentary from him. In 03 on Greatest Video Hits 2 on the DVD, he said, quote, the mushroom cloud thing was for me very real part of my childhood through the Cuban Missile Crisis. We thought the bomb was about to drop, and I used to have dreams about that, unquote. And sadly, I couldn't find a recording of that commentary to hear more, but Brian elaborated quite a bit on his official website in 04, just a year later. Quote, and I think I paraphrased a lot of this, Hammer to Fall is really about life and death. I was inspired, I think, by Waiting for Godot, although there are a lot of other things mixed up with it in there. The hammer coming down is only a symbol of the Grim Reaper doing his job. The last verse of Hammer to Fall, well, it's always been a personal kind of part. The specter of the mushroom cloud was absolutely a real part of my childhood. We were constantly told it was going to happen. The last verse is really one of my protests against violent solutions. So it should not be too out of place in a Christian perspective, though I am probably not a very good Christian, unquote. And this goes back to my thoughts about his spirituality and what he believes. Is he simply saying that he doesn't believe what Christians believe? Or is he saying that he's thought about it or he's explored it? This is a man who's done a lot of studying in his life. He's an astrophysicist. He's not short on knowledge, general understanding. We know he was intrigued by history and he likes to understand different kinds of people. He wrote and sang White Man, which was from the perspective of the Native American. We know he likes to open his mind to the world and to the people in it and where they get their perspectives and how they understand things themselves. And how does that relate to the way he is? I think he would go very deep in that respect. And I imagine he always has and still does. A lot of questions there, but you can clearly see that in that comment, he's just saying that the hammer to fall is death coming for you. It is nothing more than that. It wasn't meant to be aimed at a specific country. You know, a lot of people thought it was about the USSR. You know, there's a lot of wondering about that because of the imagery and what was going on at that time. Nope, it's simply about death. And I suppose we shouldn't be surprised, given Brian's fixation on that topic. Very interesting. Because this is such a celebratory band. How celebratory Queen is. This song feels that way, in fact. But for some reason, it works, even though it's so dark and so deep. And you know what? I got nothing in the negativity department. Absolutely nothing, which is fantastic. I could find no criticism of Hammer to Fall. And I don't. I never see it. I do have praise. Sounds, in their review for The Works, wrote, quote, "A nip of the old Brian May metal with the excellent, actually, Hammer to Fall," unquote. A generous comment, given much of that review was very critical. Rolling Stone called this a, quote, "thundering Led Zeppelinism," unquote. And The Sun Sentinel called it, quote, "a hard-driving, energetic video showcase," unquote. You know, I want to go back to that Rolling Stone comment, "thundering Led Zeppelinism." That could actually be a backhanded dig, because Rolling Stone was always criticizing Queen of imitation rather than standing on their own musicality. But I take that to be, I put it in the praise simply because, one, who wouldn't want to be called Zeppelin-like, Led Zeppelin-like in the rock world? And two, thundering. It's about as rock as you can get. So it says a lot in just those three words. Cashbox in 84, quote, "with customary raw energy highlighted by the powerful vocals of Freddie Mercury and the unstoppable energy of guitarist, composer Brian May, Queen still exemplifies the essence of solid rock. The song itself offers nothing particularly new, but is performed energetically and contains more than enough of what Queen's fans have come to expect," unquote. Now, fans far and wide love this song, and many feel encouraged despite the subject matter, that celebratory jive. And here's where we get into it. You guys, I'm not sure why, but when I broke this down like this, I really went into ridiculous detail. So come along with me and hold on tight. Guitars, strong, melodic riff, A, D, A, tonic, fourth. But the tonic lingers in that chord, reinforcing us. It's a 3+5 8th note pattern. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Da-na, da-na, creates that syncopation. The fourth beat, pow, snappy snare, and the fourth measure, E, A chords, the fifth and the tonic. Yeah, Freddie, those drums, 16th notes, that trio that fill into the next phrase, da-da-da, with bass, John jazzing it up in his way. Here we stand, or here we fall. History won't care at all. This moment right here is the moment I thought, this sounds flat. I heard it in Freddie's voice, that lower tuning. But he is indeed locked into the guitars. That delay on his vocals is so perfect, fills the gaps between the sounds, between the words. The overdubbed digital snare is evident in that resonant frequency. It sounds almost airy or sweeping, as though an explosion just wiped out everything else away. Make them bad, like the light, yeah. Freddie's tone, urgent perfection, but still kind of playful in a way. It's aggressive, adamant, and John. This bass line isn't complicated, no. But listen to what he does with those little accents. Up an octave, beautiful surprise. You don't waste no time at all, chorus. But it's more like a livelier verse, eighth note bass in its persistence. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Choral vocals from all three of our boys, and I hear Brian a lot in those harmonies. Some interesting things happen here. The guitars actually soften. Roger's drumming creates more energy. Listen to those kicks, that bass drum. Along with John, this is where the urgency comes. And while John lingers on that tonic, pounding it into our ears, The boys' vocals fall down the scale perfectly in harmony. It's a glorious arrangement, if an uncomplicated one. Don't hear the bell, but you answer the call. The inevitability of death upon us, yes. And I love Brian's contrasted guitars against Freddie's vocal. Yeah, we're just waiting for the hammer to fall. Yeah, hammer to fall. Every instrument rests on that phrase and that melody, duplicating, tripling it, the weight, the intention. Every night, every day, a little piece of you is falling away. The syncopation. Tell me these aren't some of the most depressing, realistic words ever. But somehow surrounded by the joyous melody, it takes on a different appealing tone. We want to keep listening. These joyous melodies include an almost gleeful synthesizer bouncing eighth notes, echoing the guitar chords. Build your muscles as your body decays. Yeah! More of those deeply affecting words leading into the next chorus. But the lyrics are different. To your light and play their game. Let the anesthetic cover it all. What a moody, doom-filled thought. Very unique. You never hear the word anesthetic in a song. Really, this is a focus on the obsession with war and weapons and what becomes of societies that become fixated on the power and the tension. And as we lead into the bridge, the most rock and roll we get in the entire song, Brian deviates more scratching grittiness to build that crescendo. Rich or poor or famous, for your truth is all the same. First, Freddie's energy here. The notes are simple, G sharp, A, B, and a little riff down to E. But it's syncopated, striking the offbeats. His expression is flawless, though. A rough, it's intentional. The chords in the instrumental, though, we got E, F sharp, seventh, E, G sharp, and that seventh chord. And the layered, rich oohs rising up the scale as the rhythm guitar glitters on arpeggios. And we land on D as the choral vocals, especially Roger. And the percussion that rolls those harsh 16ths. John does some fun stuff here. I picked this out because I was so impressed. D, A, lower octave, higher A, G, G, D, E. That G to D is such an odd interval. It's such an odd choice, but it works. Same chord progression, next phrase. Lock your door, but rain is pouring through your window pane. John on eighth notes, that sparkling rhythm guitar. A really cool counterpoint happens to begin this resolution. John rises to the seventh, but the guitars fall to the fourth. Baby, now your struggle is all in vain. I admit, I wasn't sure what Freddie's saying there for a long time. It's so intense in the midst of the crashing drums and those threes, everything rising. And I love that Freddie falls to almost a minor third on that last note when he closes out that run. And here we are, solo one, and we're in an echo of a key change, modal mode B, E major. There's a 3+5 rhythm happening again. Hey, it's like Coldplay's Clocks, sort of. First few phrases of this are deeper, growling guitar chords, and then higher and piercing. Brian's soaring notes down the scale, teasing, thrilling. I gotta say, one of the most exciting moments on the whole album right here. Bent notes on the guitar, more cymbals, harmonics, and shift gears, C major. Tom's on the drums, on the beat, but that second phrase brings in the punch earlier. Creates anticipation. And talk about a rise in spirit and urgency. Brian's runs here, this fluttery effect where he begins on one note and shifts to another throughout every phrase in this, this beautiful arch of notes that bursts into the spotlight and falls down dramatically. And we get Raj on 3+3+2, which is a true clocks. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Another element that's perfectly offsetting and intriguing. We're not done with Brian's brilliance yet, though. We're officially in another solo, back in the home key of A, and the boys are ooing in pristine harmonies once again. This is an echo of the choruses, an instrumental version with Brian emulating vocal performances. We get a nice resolve, 3+3, lingering on that D, and third and final verse. For he who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of a mushroom cloud. The atomic bombs, the threat of war. Except we've got the bouncy synth again. Guitars and even the bass feel almost muted. We just want to scream it louder and louder. And here it comes, our big chorus. What are we fighting for? It's loud and full with the boys harmonizing, almost screaming happening here. And you can feel the seriousness of the phrase. Just got time to say your prayers while you're waiting for the hammer to fall. The synth rings out, the drums pound away, guitar grinds in. We hear swirling melodies of the intro and the verse chords bursting. Freddie improvises some impressive phrases. It's gonna fall. Brian adds a higher octave of guitar harmonies as we get Fred. Woo! I really dig Raj's snares on every downbeat here. And then into an arrangement an awful lot like the intro. While you're waiting for the hammer to fall. First ending with John's little lick at the end. Fantastic drum roll. That cool guitar feedback, B to E. Give it to me one more time. A second ending, half-hearted guitar chord, crash. Third ending. And I think there was a bass note in there. Stronger guitar chord, a harmonic, synth, crash, final ending. Synth snare crash, final ending. Rather impactful and impressive. Certainly unforgettable, this one. Playful, almost satisfying. This is such a good composition of a song. Truly, it's a good rock. It's a sturdy rock song. I think if you're looking for something that is expressive and passionate, we never fail to get that from Brian, ever. Whether it's a soft, soothing melody like 39, or it's something like this, or it's Dragon Attack that's in your face. This man gives us a lot of rock and a lot of tension and a lot of passion, and I love him for it. And if you already love Hammer to Fall, go check out Budapest 86 and go check out Brian's, what did I say that was? 1998 ballad performance live. Really surprising. And I think perfectly intertwines It's Late. Those more ballad-like acoustic elements of It's Late, those guitars that weren't really acoustic, but you know what I mean. Laid back. That's married perfectly with what we get with this Hammer to Fall. Such an interesting mix. And I urge you to go check it out before the hammer falls, baby. All right, guys, keep yourselves alive. My voice is going. I don't know what's happening, but I will talk to you guys later. And next time, we are coming to the final song on The Works. Very interesting contrast from what we just talked about today. But it's a good one. If a short one, you'll love it. It closes out our 11th album. And then I will reveal who stole my attention the most this time around. But until then, take care.